हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Yes. So then, now we're in the chapter of Duryodhana's obstinacy. So Krishna's come. And that, and then now this being figured out that Duryodhana is planning to capture Krishna. And so then Dhritarashtra makes a point, this one makes a point, now Vidura is speaking, then, you know, trying to convince them, don't even try this, you know. Vidura named various other asuras and kings who Krishna had defeated. Finally, he said, Krishna is the doer of everything. He is the cause of all causes. From him comes all power and opulence. He can do anything without the least effort. O Duryodhana, you do not understand Govinda. His prowess is incomparable, and it will reduce you and your followers to ashes. Attempting to take him prisoner is ludicrous in the extreme. Krishna looked at Duryodhana. O Kaurava, out of folly you think me to be alone and vulnerable. O one of small intellect, see now as I show you the truth. Here are all the Pandavas, the Vrishnis, and the Andakas. Here too are the gods, the Adityas, Rudras, Vasus, and great Rishis. Duryodhana could take no more. He jumped up and pointed at Krishna. Seize him now! At once his soldiers began running into the hall from all its entrances. With swords and bow at the ready, they closed in on Krishna. Krishna laughed, and as he did, his body suddenly flashed like lightning. He began to grow in size, and various gods issued from him. Brahma sprang from his forehead, Shiva from his chest, the Lokapal sat on his arms, and Agni appeared from his mouth. Then Indra and the Maruts appeared along with hosts of Gandharvas, Yakshas, and Rakshasas. From his two eyes came Balaram and Arjuna, who stood on his left and right sides. Behind him stood Yudhishthira, Bhima, and the twins. Behind them were the Vrishnis and Andakas, headed by Prajumna. Krishna's mace, disc, club, and club weapons appeared, blazing brilliantly. His pores emanated light, sparks, and clouds of smoke. The sight was so frightening that almost everyone in the assembly closed their eyes. Only Bhishma, Drona, Vidura, and Sanjaya were able to look upon Krishna as he manifested his universal form. The rishis also gazed upon him, folding their palms and offering prayers. The sky resounded with celestial drums, and flowers showered from the heavens into the hall. Sanjaya described the event to Dhritarashtra, who said, O Krishna, you are ever doing good for the world. Therefore it is right that you should bless me with the eyes to see your form. O best of the Yadavas, I pray for the sight to see you. O Kuru leader, let your eyes have sight, Krishna replied, and immediately Dhritarashtra could see him standing within the great hall. He also saw numerous gods approaching Krishna, worshipping him with Vedic mantras. Outside the hall, a fierce wind blew, huge waves moved over the ocean, and thunderclaps reverberated in the sky. The earth trembled. The hall was in a tumult. Krishna withdrew his mystical form and again assumed his two-armed form. Taking permission from the rishis, he left the hall, holding the hands of Satyaki and Kritavarma. The rishis, headed by Narada, rose from their seats and vanished. Their minds astonished, Dhritarashtra again became blind, and he sat in silent amazement. Right, so after showing this, and then, you know, Duryodhana has to be, you know, is stopped, and everybody stops. Everyone's amazed. So only the devotees could actually look at him properly. And Dhritarashtra asked to see, and so he's seeing because of that interest in that. But, you know, he's only seeing the universal form on that, because otherwise then he's not seeing Krishna as he's walking out. And so then Krishna then got up and left, walked out with his devotees, and then the rishis, then they excused themselves, and then they just disappear. So they got up in the seats as Krishna, and then they just disappear. As Krishna left, the Kurus followed him with folded hands, like the gods following Indra. Only Duryodhana and his ministers remained seated. They were struck with wonder and unable to do or say anything. Their plan to capture Krishna was obviously futile, right? So at least they understood that. Obviously futile. Outside the hall, at the all the natural disturbances had stopped, and a gentle breeze blew. Krishna mounted his chariot and prepared to leave. As he sat upon his golden car, spread with white tiger skins, Dhritarashtra came out of the hall, led by Vidura. He went up to Krishna and said, "You have seen the influence I wield over my sons, O Janardhana. You have seen everything. Nothing has been hidden from you. It is not proper to blame me, O Keshava, for I desire only peace. I have no wicked intentions against the Pandavas. You have heard me speak to Duryodhana and seen his response. I have done my best." The Kuru elders surrounded Dhritarashtra. Krishna looked at all of them and said, "You have also witnessed everything, how that uncultured man walked out, even as he was receiving instructions meant for his good. You have also heard the rule of the earth state that he is powerless. With your permission, I will now return to Yudhishthira." So he didn't just say, no, it's okay. He's just saying, you see, Duryodhana is not listening, and Dhritarashtra said he's powerless. So that means Duryodhana's point that nothing will be given back is the answer. Because Dhritarashtra is saying he's powerless. You know, his attachment is there, and he said he tried, but it doesn't work because he's only now kind of coming to his senses. Otherwise, before it was like they were insulting Draupadi. He's asking, "Oh, was she one?" He doesn't actually understand what's going on. "With your permission, I will now return to Yudhishthira." Krishna sat down with Satyaki and Kritavarma on either side of him. Daruka urged on the horses, and the chariot moved off. The Kurus watched it move along the broad highway, cheered on all sides by crowds of citizens. Krishna ordered Daruka to take him back to Vidura's house. He wanted to speak once more to Kunti before he left for Virat. Going before his aunt with Satyaki, Krishna touched her feet and told her what had transpired in the assembly. Kunti was not surprised. She had not expected Duryodhana to listen. Fearing that Yudhishthira might be too forgiving, she asked Krishna to exhort him to fight. She knew he would be loath to fight with his kinsmen and elders only to win a kingdom. As a Kshatriya princess, Kunti had been educated in the rules of conduct for warriors. She spoke for some time with Krishna, citing the rules and making it clear that the proper course for Yudhishthira was war. Her sons should harbor no doubt about it. Again reminding Krishna of the prophetic voices that it had foretold great things for his sons at their births, Kunti said, "Let it be as the divine oracles predicted. O Krishna, my sons must now fulfill their destiny and take control of this earth. They will not achieve it through peaceful means, nor can Draupadi's honor be restored unless my sons fight. For me, this is the most compelling reason for war. They must avenge their wife. They have not freed themselves of that obligation. They failed to protect her in the vicious assembly at the dice game. They must now rectify this wrong." So her point is, if at that time, because they were following the rules, they can't, you know, just of respecting the elders, even though they're very wrong at this point. You know, so in that way, in one sense, it's all right. And we also know it's Krishna's plan, because when he is going to destroy all the demons, he gets them all together in one place and then destroys them. You know, like you see, it's Hiranyakashipu, then him and all his men are in one place, or Ravana and all his men are in one place, and now you see Duryodhana and all his men are in one place. And so if at that time they had just said, "This is crazy," and got up and then, you know, killed Dushasana and Duryodhana and like that, then we wouldn't be having this problem. Right? Dhritarashtra would be a little disappointed, but, you know, that you wouldn't be, you know, a few people die that are bad, then everybody else, but like this way, those bad persons will die, but along with so many of the kings. Kunti bowed down and touched Krishna's feet with her hands. Standing again, she concluded, O Keshava, tell my sons that I am well. Go now on your auspicious way. Krishna stood up to leave. After walking respectfully around his aunt, he bid her farewell and left the room. Outside, he found Bhishma and the other Kuru elders waiting to see him off. Krishna bowed before them, exchanged farewells, and mounted his chariot with Satyaki. Then he headed out of Hastinapur. The Kurus watched as the chariot sped towards the city's southern gate. Urged on by Daruka, Krishna's horse seemed to leap into the sky again and again. In a short time, he was out of sight. The Kuru chiefs turned and headed towards the king's palace. Krishna's peace mission had failed, war was certain. Right, because the Krishna, it's not the, oh, but then Krishna can't do things. Krishna's point was, as the Supreme Lord, he gives everyone that free will. So he's going there and presenting things as they are. Now you make your choice. And so then the choice was taken for war. They even tried to attack Krishna, and so then that's not going to work out. So it is very obvious. It's just war. 48. To Kurukshetra. Early on the morning of Krishna's departure, Karna rose to perform his usual worship of the sun god, Surya. Since childhood, he had been attracted to Surya, had never missed his rituals and prayers. An hour before sunrise, he mounted his chariot and went to the Ganges, accompanied by numerous Brahmins. Wearing only a loincloth, he waded into the shallows and faced east, chanting Vedic hymns. On the riverbank, the Brahmins lit a sacred fire and made offerings to Surya on his behalf. It was well known that Karna would offer chariot to anyone who approached him after his worship. His vow to give anything to any petitioner was famous. Indra had already taken advantage of the vow and divested him of his natural armor. Now Kunti approached him. The first time she saw the youthful Karna enter the arena of Drona's martial exhibition, she knew he was her son. She also knew he was ignorant of the fact. It was painful to see him feuding constantly with his brothers. She was mortified at the thought that they would soon try to kill each other in battle. It was time to tell Karna the truth. Perhaps he would be convinced to join his brother's side. Just as the sun rose, Kunti made her way alone to the Ganges. As she approached the riverside, she heard Karna reciting prayers aloud. She looked at him as a mother looks at her son. He stood facing the sun, his arms held over his head, and his hands joined together in prayer, a position he would maintain until the sun had risen high into the sky. Kunti sat on the riverbank and waited for Karna to finish. It was summer, and the thin silk cloth covering her head provided little protection from the heat. After she had waited for more than 2 hours, Karna finally completed his worship and turned around. He was surprised to see Kunti before him. But he said, You are most welcome, noble lady. I am Karna, the son of Adhirata and Radha. I salute you with all respect. Tell me what I can do for you today. Kunti rose and went towards Karna with faltering steps. He had now stepped from the river and stood dripping. As the Kuru queen approached him, he saw that her beautiful features appeared drawn. Her eyes darted nervously from him to the ground. Clasping her hands together, she softly addressed him, O my child, you are not the son of Radha and Adhirata. Her voice quavered as she paused to gain her composure. Dear child, you were not born a Suta. Know that you are my son, conceived by the powerful Surya. When you were born, you blazed like your father, and you wore a natural coat of armor and shining earrings. Out of fear for my reputation and my father's, since I was still considered a maiden, I cast you away, stricken with grief. Tears flooded Kunti's eyes. It always cut her heart to think of how she had abandoned Karna at birth, but there had been no question of telling anyone about it. Even when he arrived at the arena that day, she had been gratified to know that Adhirata and his wife had at least cared for his son, and she thought there would be no need to reveal the truth. Now he was about to die. She had to try to save him. If he did not die, he would kill Arjuna. Kunti could not bear losing either son. She looked into Karna's wide, unbelieving eyes. Not knowing of your birth, you have not realized that the Pandavas are actually your brothers. You now serve Duryodhana, This is not proper, my son. Avaricious and deceitful men who have stolen Yudhishthira's kingdom are leading you. You will be ruined if you continue to follow them. Instead, follow the virtuous path and join your brothers. Karna, his two strong hands on the, to the sides of his head, as if to contain the raging confusion that Kunti's words had created. How could it be true? If she had always known that he was the Pandava's brother, then why had she not said so sooner? This was just some ploy to discourage him from, fighting with the Pandavas? That seemed unlikely. Kunti was famous for her virtue and truth. Her words must be true. As they sank in, Karna felt rooted to the spot where he stood. He was too amazed to speak. Kunti wiped her eyes and glanced up at the sun. Why had that blazing deity put her through such pain? It had been an extremely difficult decision for her to reveal the truth to her firstborn son. She loved Karna, but he would surely find that impossible to accept. Whenever she had contemplated telling him, the fear of his reaction had stopped her. Would he reject her out of hand, just as she had rejected him? Now it no longer mattered. She was willing to risk his rejection and anger if it meant saving his life. Let the Kurus see you join with Arjuna. When brotherly feelings are established between you, the Kauravas will bow before you in fear and respect. You and Arjuna, united with Balaram and Janardhan, what will you not achieve? O Karna, surrounded by your five brothers, you will shine like Brahma amid the gods. You are my eldest son, child. Do not call yourself a Suta again. Right, so technically, he would be the eldest, because right now Yudhishthira is, he'll be king. But technically, Karna would be the senior. And then the five Pandavas would assist him. So he's always wanted to see them in a junior position. But now that position would be that of brothers working together with their elder brother. When Kunti had finished, Karna heard a voice coming from the sun. O Karna, Kunti speaks the truth. Follow her advice, for that will be in your best interest. Right? So the sun god, he knows that if he does this, then he will also live. Because him and the Pandavas, if they all fight together, who's going to win? Right? Karna was convinced. He was Kunti's son and Yudhishthira's elder brother. Suddenly it all made sense. Adirata had told him how, many years ago, he had found him floating in a basket in the Ganges. Adirata said that he had shone like a celestial, and he had thought the gods had sent him a child to fulfill some divine purpose. So he told him he found him like that, but he thought that he wanted a son, and so the gods had sent him a son, and that's all. He didn't think that it was somebody else's son that they put in the basket. They just thought that the gods had sent. So therefore, there was no endeavor made to find out where he was from. He had brought the child home and raised him with love. Later, when Karna learned from the sun god that his natural armor was celestial, he had realized that Adirata was probably right. He must have been conceived by some powerful deity, but he had never guessed the truth. Karna's voice rose above the rushing sound of the river. I do not doubt your words, lady, but I cannot respect them. I do not see what virtue would lie in joining with the Pandavas, nor do I feel that you were virtuous to have abandoned me at birth. By doing so, you have destroyed my fame and renown. I have been labeled a Suta and denied the rights of a Kshatriya, which were rightfully mine. What enemy could possibly have done me greater harm? Karna dropped to his knees, clenching his eyes and fists. He threw his head back towards the sun. Hot tears wetted his face, which was contorted with grief and anger. He had often wondered about the identity of his real mother, longing to one day meet her. Now here she stood, Kunti, the Kuru queen and mother of his hated enemies, but his own mother nevertheless. Feelings of love welled up in Karna's heart, but he fought to deny them. Even in spite of Surya's words, it was hard to accept that she had his interests in mind. Nor did he like the idea of leaving Duryodhana at his most dire hour of need. Unlike Kunti, the Kaurava prince had shown him real love and friendship from the very beginning. How could he now suddenly abandon him and switch his affections to the Pandavas, right? So by religious principles and all that, on one level, then, Kunti's right, Surya's right, and that's the position. And if he did that, he would actually be fighting for right. But he's looking at the point that Duryodhana was a friend and always supported him. So even if he's a bad person, but he was a friend, and he's like, so now it is hour of need, how can he leave? Like that. And plus he's developed such a, you know, an attitude towards the Pandavas. And, you know, his mother hasn't shown him that affection or things like that. So he's caught up in these kind of things. But technically, it means if he was being totally correct, then he would move on. Because the point is yes, he was treated so, but now he'd be the emperor of the world. When people find out that actually the position and everything, and it's been so long and how it worked out, you know, it would work out nicely. And there's a good chance that Duryodhana is not going to fight if he knows. Because he was very much confident, because Karna's on his side. He always hear him talk about Karna, that Arjuna's not 1/16 of Karna. He doesn't say Bhishma or Drona or anyone else, because he's thinking they won't necessarily fight their best, but Karna will. Now, if Karna is on the other side, he may decide not to fight, you know, and then save so much trouble. But, you know, what to do? That's the way he's thinking, and so therefore then that's he's thinking he's being religious, and he is on one level, but at the lower level. At the higher level, then he's avoiding what would be the best. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.